Why are there so many wars over who has the right and correct religion?
Most of your Earth religions believe that there is only one way to God, and that their way is the one way. They believe this, and teach it so fervently that they feel themselves to be superior in my eyes. They have accepted as real the illusion of superiority. Many of them also believe that they must convince others to believe as they do, and that in doing this they are meeting their responsibility to me. Finally, some religions and their followers believe and teach that persons of religions other than their own are my enemies, and so must be converted, removed, or eliminated. These thoughts and ideas have produced justifications for ethnic cleansing, religious intolerance, and so-called holy wars. As I said earlier, these ideas spring from a belief in an entire set of illusions around which humans have built their understandings of life, their philosophies, their religions, their political systems, and their economic systems. The illusion of superiority is but one of them. These illusions are not real, but they have been made to seem very real because of the power that humans have given them.
No wonder the world is the way it is.
Yes. It exists inside of a belief system of fear, insufficiency, and false superiority. Most of your worldwide institutions, not just religion, but politics, economics, education, and social constructions of every variety, exist inside this paradigm, operate in this setting. That is why there are so many wars over who has the right and correct religion, the right and correct political system, the right and correct economic system, and the right and correct amount of the stuff on Earth of which humans think there is not enough. It is the struggle to gather the stuff of which there is not enough, into which category, sadly, you have also put God's love, that produces wars. In the future, you may add water to this list.
What?
Because of the way you have lived, you may create a situation in which water will appear to be part of the stuff of which there is not enough. In many parts of your world, that is already becoming true. And so you may have, in the 21st century, what you will call water wars. Remember how you labeled your biggest battles World War I and World War II?
Yeah.
Well, now you may very well have Water War I and Water War II, if you ever get that far. With today's technology, one war may end everything.
Man, nice picture. Nice prediction.
I said may. You can still avoid this. Just as you can still avoid not having enough clean air, not having enough usable topsoil, not having enough trees to create oxygen, and not having enough covering over your planet to protect it from global warming. You can avoid all of these things. There is still time. And now you are here. You have arrived on the scene. And maybe you will choose to change things. But do not choose to change things by only changing conditions. Work to change conditions, yes. But know that you must also change the beliefs that create the conditions, or sooner or later everything will just return to the way it was.
Why doesn't everyone believe in one God?
Most people do believe in one God, their God. To them, their God is the only God, and everyone else's God is a false God. Sadly, this idea has resulted in the killing of a lot of people, in the name of God. Now, it is natural for people to wish to express themselves in ways that allow them to experience their individuality. That is why people dress differently, comb their hair differently, drive different cars, and live different lives in so many different ways. The trick here is to see if members of the human race can find a way to not let their individual expression separate them and cause them to feel righteous or superior. Righteousness and superiority about your expressions of individuality, whether religious or political or philosophical or economical or social or sexual, can lead to insane behavior. In the book Friendship with God, I brought the human race a new gospel that would heal the world in two sentences. We are all one. And ours is not a better way, ours is merely another way. I challenge every priest, every minister, every rabbi, every nation's leader, every politician, every economist, and every teacher in every school to stand up in front of those who listen to them this week and preach this gospel. I challenge them to say these 15 words. These are 15 words that would save the world, yet your presidents and your prime ministers, your popes and your bishops, your politicians and your teachers have never been able to utter them.
Why?
Because there is one thing that human beings will give up everything for. They will give up happiness, love, joy, peace, prosperity, romance, excitement, serenity, everything, even their own health for this.
What? What is it?
Being right.
What is the role of religion in life if religion is not supposed to say that it knows the right way to God? Does it have a role?
Religion, as with everything else, plays the role that you give it. You could give it the role of bringing people closer to God and closer to each other. Right now, I observe that in more cases than not, religion has done the opposite. In fact, nothing has done more to separate people from each other and from God than organized religion.
I like going to my church. I believe in my religion. Are you saying that I shouldn't?
Absolutely not. I would never suggest that any person give up their religion if they believe in it with all their heart and all their soul, and if their lives are happier because of their beliefs.
What would you say?
I would say, go about living the answers you have, but never stop questioning the answers you are living. That is the true posture of every seeker, and it is the true purpose of every religion. I observe that many humans derive great value from religion. Religions, therefore, will always have an important role to play in the human adventure, so long as they open doors and do not slam them.
What is the difference between religion and spirituality?
One is an institution, and the other is an experience.
Religions are institutions built around a particular idea of how things are. When those ideas become hardened and set in stone, they are called doctrines, and they become largely unchallengeable. You either believe them, or you don't. Spirituality, in its freest form, does not require you to believe anything. Rather, it continually invites you to notice your experience. Your personal experience becomes your authority, rather than something that someone else has told you. If you had to belong to a particular religion to find God, it would mean that God has a particular way or means by which you are required to come to Him.
Why would God require that?
The answer is, I don't. The idea that God has only one way of approaching her, or a one particular means of returning to her, and that this way and only this way will work, is fallout from the illusion of requirement. This is another of the illusions of humans, another of those misunderstandings we've discussed, and it has nothing to do with ultimate reality.
I have no need to require anything of you, because I have no need to receive anything from you. Is saying a rosary better than saying the Savitu? Is the practice called bhakti more sacred than the practice called seder?
No, obviously no. Then why do religions insist that their way is the best way? No, the only way to you.
Well, we're going around and around on this now, and it starts to feel as though I'm just repeating myself here.
Wait, tell me once more. I want to be able to get this.
It is helpful for religions to imagine this because it gives them a tool with which to seek, acquire, and retain members, and thus to continue to exist. It is the first function of all organizations to perpetuate themselves. The moment any organization serves the purpose for which it was formed, that organization becomes no longer necessary. This is why organizations seldom complete the task for which they were created. Organizations are not, as a rule, interested in rendering themselves obsolete. This is as true of religions as it is of any other organized undertaking, perhaps more so. The fact that a particular religion has been around for a very long time is not an indication of its effectiveness, but just the opposite.
But if it weren't for religion, how would we know how to get to heaven?
In the first place, you cannot get to heaven. There is no other place to go. Yet even if there were, and you were looking for directions to heaven, religion could be a very confusing place from which to get them. There are many different religions on the earth, and each one has its own set of directions, reflecting its best idea of how God wants it. Of course, as has been said here now repeatedly, there is no particular way that God wants you to worship God. Nor, in fact, does God need to be worshipped at all. God's ego is not so fragile that she must require humans to bow down to her in fearful reverence, or grovel before him in earnest supplication in order for God to find them worthy of receiving blessings. What kind of a God would this be? That is the question you must honestly ask yourself. You have been told that God has made humans in his image and likeness. Yet is it possible that religions have fashioned God in the image and likeness of humans?
But if you are all-powerful and mighty, and you can create miracles, then why don't you turn non-believers into believers of your religion?
It would be hard for me to get people to believe in my religion because I do not have a religion. As we've just discussed, everyone would like to think that I have a religion and that my religion is their religion. But the miracle that I have created is much greater than the miracle you wish to attribute to me. The real miracle is that everyone is going to return to me, regardless of the path they take. They will return to me because there is nowhere else to go. I am all there is. There is nothing else. I tell you again, there is no hell. There is an experience of hell, which is separation from me, but you can end that experience whenever you wish, either in this life or in the next. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end, the all in all.
You cannot avoid your happy destiny, but you can postpone it. Yet all it takes to speed your journey is a yearning sincere and true. In that moment of yearning, I will be there. You do not have to come home to me. You will know in that moment that I have always been with you, just as I am here in this audiobook.
How could someone not believe in you, God?
Everyone has free will to believe or not believe what they choose. Most people's beliefs are based on their experience. Masters are people who live life the other way around. Their beliefs are not based on their experience. Their experience is based on their beliefs. Masters have turned everything upside down, or really right side up. It is very okay that some people do not believe in me. Not believing in me cannot cause me not to be. I am always with you, believe it or not.
When will you come down again?
I never left. Don't you see? I never left. That's the whole point here. Everyone thinks I left, and I never left. I am here, with you and around you and in you. And when you understand that, you no longer have to feel alone. You no longer have to feel abandoned. You no longer have to feel afraid. And you no longer have to worry about how or whether you can get back to me. I am here. I never left.
And you will never leave me, ever?
How could God leave you? You are too glorious, too wondrous, far too special to ever be left. Indeed, the reason that you are glorious, wondrous, and special is that I never left you. We are one. Do you not believe this? If you do not, then you have misunderstood everything I have ever tried to show you, everything I have ever tried to reveal to you through the process of your life. Yet that process is not over. It will never be over. We have forever to know and experience the truth of our oneness.
When is your next prophet coming, and how will I know who he is?
My prophets are arriving every minute of every hour of every day. The dictionary defines prophet as one who utters divinely inspired revelations, and one gifted with more than ordinary spiritual and moral insight. There are thousands of such people all over the world. You do not have to wait for one to come. You merely have to recognize them when they do. You also have the option of simply being that yourself.
Me? How could I be that? I could never be that.
Yes, you could. This is a great secret of life. You can all be what it is that you are waiting for. And as soon as you choose to be that, your waiting is over. If you are waiting for love in your life, be the love for which you are waiting. If you are waiting for compassion in your life, be the source of compassion for everyone whose life you touch. If you are waiting for laughter and fun to enter your life, bring that into the room when you enter the room. What you are waiting for will arrive when you arrive with it. Remember this always. What you are waiting for will arrive when you arrive with it. You are that for which you are waiting.
I wish I could believe that.
Then do believe it, for what you believe, you become. This is something that not many people understand. This is a message that would change the world. You can send this message just by living your life. In this way, you will give people back to themselves by showing them who they really are. To many of them, this will be a great revelation, and you will be a prophet indeed. Not merely in thought, not only in word, but in deed.
How does it feel to be you? What does it feel like to be God?
Wonderful. It feels wonderful. All the life in the universe courses through me because I am all the life in the universe. And it is exhilarating, exciting, and wondrous indeed.
How does it feel to be me? It feels peaceful. There is nothing that I need to be happy that exists outside of me. The same is true of you. How does it feel to be me? It feels complete. I am whole, complete, and perfect just as I am. The same is true of you. How does it feel to be me? It feels safe. Nothing can harm me, and I will always be, eternally. The same is true of you. How does it feel to be me? It feels like fun. I can create and create every moment and experience in the next moment what I have just created. The same is true of you. It is wonderful to be me, and it is wonderful to be you, because you are who I am, and I am who you are. And could there be anything more wonderful than you? I do not think so.
Where did God come from?
Everywhere. I came from everywhere, and I am everywhere right now. There is not a single where in which I am not. I am in everywhere there is. Therefore, I am nowhere in particular. So, that's where I am. Nowhere. Or, if you split the words differently, now, here.
Are you listening? How come you don't show me any sign that you're listening to me when I pray to you?
Oh, but I do show signs that I am listening to you. You simply do not see them, or you see them, but do not believe them. Often, you simply dismiss them. Sometimes, when you are praying, your heart will beat faster. Sometimes, you'll be filled with a feeling of great peace. Sometimes, you'll feel that you want to weep with joy. Sometimes, you will have a sudden experience of oneness with everyone and everything. Sometimes, an experience of deep understanding, or inner awareness, or absolute forgiveness for yourself or another will come over you. These sensations, and more, are signs from me. Sometimes, you will feel nothing at all, experience nothing at all. Yet, even this is a sign from me. It is what you could call the emptiness, and it is here, in fact, that I reside. It is from the emptiness that all wisdom will come and all healing will originate. It is from the void that I have come and to the void that I will always return. And your mind can go there too, if you will let it. Why would you want to go to the void? Because that is where peace will be found. That is where wisdom will be found. That is where I will be found waiting for you. The void is that place where all thoughts, all fears, all sorrows, all anguish, apprehension, misunderstanding disappears. It is the place where the mind can quiet itself at last and be at rest. You can go there by many paths, taking a walk alone, riding your bike or a cycle, listening to your CDs, floating on a water raft. Some people use meditation or prayer. So do not avoid the void. Learn to love the emptiness. This is the inner space of divinity within you. Fear of the void is very natural because it feels like nothing, that is, like no thing at all. But do not fear. This is where your true self will be found, for you are not a thing. You are no thing. Everything that you think that you are not. The things of life, including your very body, are merely tools with which you can experience who you really are. And the first thing you will discover as you use these tools is that you are not these tools, but rather the user of them. This will change everything in your life.
How? I hear those words, but I don't understand that.
You are not your body. Your body is something you have. It is not something you are, and it is not indestructible. You are, but your body is not. Most people have a feeling of indestructibility, especially when they are young, when they are teenagers. It feels as though nothing can hurt them, nothing can harm them. There is nothing they cannot do, and this is true. But it is true of their spiritual selves, not of their physical selves. When you understand this, you actually take care of your body better than you did before. You understand that it is something that you have been given, like everything else in your life, to use temporarily. It is a gift. It is not you. It is a gift to you. And you begin to treat it as such. You begin feeling the same way about relationships. You see all other people in your life as gifts, which is what they are, sent to you to help you recreate in each moment the divine being that you choose to experience in and as yourself. Finally, you also come to clarity about the physical possessions in your life as well. You begin to understand that you really have no possessions at all, but merely hold stewardship over certain things for a little while. If you take good care of them, you can truly enjoy them and experience that part of yourself that you know as joy.
Yet then there comes a time when you easily let them go, knowing that there's more where that came from, and that you are not that. You are not that money, or that job, or that car, or that beautiful house in the country, or any of that stuff that you have accumulated. This is that, and you are you. And you will be you with or without that. This is a great awakening. You begin living your life in a new way. You cease the endless effort to accumulate more and more of that, and you begin the spiritual quest to experience more and more of you, more and more of who you really are.
I've read the Conversations with God books, and I keep hearing that phrase, who you really are, used. But who am I, really?
Who you really are is a blessed being. You are not a thing, nor are you any of the things that you have. You are a spiritual being, and it is in the experience of being that you will find your greatest joy. In one word, the being you are is love. You are that which love is. That is why, when you are being that, you are the happiest you could ever be. And that is why, when you are not allowed to be that, or not allowing yourself to be that, you are the saddest that you will ever be. And nothing else will matter. Not what you do, not what you have, and not who you are in the world. None of it will matter. Love, of course, is another word for God. The two words are interchangeable. This means that who you really are is me. You are an aspect of divinity, experiencing yourself.
How come it doesn't feel like that? How come it feels a lot sometimes like I'm bumbling through life, and often I'm not happy?
Because you have forgotten that you know who you really are and what you're doing here. You may think that you are your things, and that when you don't have those things, you can't be happy. You may think that you are your school, or your job, or your friends, or your money, or car, or your appearance, the way your body looks, and that if these things were taken away from you, you would disappear. This is the time of your life when you are fighting to create your own identity. And if you are not careful, you may identify with these things rather than with your true self. You may think that you are the color in your hair, or the clothes that you wear or don't wear, or the car that you drive, or the group that you hang with, and that all these things make a statement of who you are. Yet if you think this, it will not be surprising if you are unhappy, because these things have nothing to do with displaying or experiencing your true self, and that is what you came here to do. These things may be signs of youthful rebellion, but they are not signs of truthful revealing of the innermost part of you. The trick is to have fun with these things. Do not confuse them with who you are, but simply have fun with them. Yet always remember that it is no fun to hurt yourself, no fun to damage yourself, no fun to hide who you really are behind a mask of indifference or anger or a facade of hostility and disaffection. If you have frustrations with life and how things are, choose to express them in positive ways that help others change their belief systems so that the conditions you deplore eventually disappear. Try not to judge or condemn the people and circumstances that you see filling this stage of life. Rather, write a new play and become both its director and its star.
Chapter 11. Success.
I feel like I need to be successful at everything. My parents seem to desperately want that. But what is success?
You've asked the question of the century, and only you can answer it. Yet that in itself is an important revelation. Only you can answer the question, so do not let other people answer the question for you. Much of your world works within what could be called, in the English language, the 3 P's system, in which it is agreed that the biggest measures of success are productivity, popularity, and possessions. Under this system, the person who does the most things, has the most people looking up to them, and owns the most stuff, wins. You have heard the joke, the one who dies with the most toys wins? In the lives of so many members of your species, that is not a joke at all. Are productivity, popularity, and possessions your definitions of success?
I don't know. It sometimes seems that they should be. It seems as if that's what the world wants. My parents seem to want that too.
If you choose these definitions, you may have to spend your life attempting to do and have more and more. Money will be very important to you because it will be a measure of how much productivity you have been responsible for, and of how many possessions you can acquire, and to no small degree how much popularity you achieve. You should know that this can lead to endless and insane competitions, not only with others, but with yourself. You may feel that you have to show increased productivity to be seen as worthwhile. If you get C's in school, you'll be pushed to get B's. If you get B's, someone will want you to get A's. If you get 2 A's, they'll want you to get 4. It never stops, it never ends. Always there is the pressure to produce more, more, more. Some parents even reward their children with more and more possessions if they produce more and more A's, thereby cementing the link between production, possessions, and success. This emphasis on productivity, that is, on what you are doing rather than what you are being, can place incredible strain on both individuals and companies, as well as the resources they use.
That hasn't seemed to matter to too many companies or people so far.
That is why they have created in today's world merely a modern version of what their ancestors created in the past. If you follow this path, you will opt for quantity rather than quality as a measure of success in your life, and that choice will give your life its meaning.
Well, I don't care much about how much I produce, but I do want people to like me.
If you imagine that popularity is the definition of success, you will spend your life seeking the approval of others. The fact that you may lose yourself and your individuality in the process will not matter to you. What remains of you will be popular, and that limited part of you will have achieved what you have chosen to call success. Some politicians fall into this category, as do some entertainers, who have given up their real thoughts about things or their real artistry in order to create and hold their audience.
Is it not okay to at least want a few nice things?
Desiring objects is a perfectly normal and healthy aspect of life. Yet if you imagine that possessions are the definition of success, you will seek to acquire as many of the good things in life as you can. The biggest house, the flashiest car, the best seats at the ballpark, and you will make sure that others know that you have done so. You will ignore the old saying among your people that the best things in life are free, and you will work hard all your life to obtain enough money to acquire these glittering physical possessions. Then you will say that your life has been a success.
That doesn't sound like me. None of this sounds like me.
Well, then you can decide that there are other measures of success.
Such as?
Such as doing something that makes your heart sing. Something that you can get lost in for hours. Something that you would do for nothing, without ever worrying about how much you're getting paid. It's like, just give me a chance to do that.
Yes, now that sounds like me.
So how about defining success as doing what you love?
My father would say, you can't make a living doing that.
Well, you're invited to be one of the courageous ones. Someone who has chosen to make a life rather than a living.
Wow.
And that's what success should feel like. Success should feel like wow, not whoa. You should be able to say, wow is me.
But what about the bottom line? Don't I have to find a way to make a profit?
Remember what I said earlier? Profit comes in many forms. But listen, you can go ahead and make the three P's your measure of success.
Yet look to see if it has served others in your world to do that. Has your species benefited from this definition?
No, and I don't know anybody who thinks so.
Few people in the world agree individually that these are the best measures, but nearly all people in the world have agreed collectively. At the very least, they have acquiesced, which is the same thing.
Why do they do that? Why do they agree on things collectively that they disagree on individually?
This is what is known as herd mentality. It is easier to follow the herd than to move in the opposite direction. The fact that the herd is heading for a cliff is irrelevant, if it is even noticed.
Can we stop the stampede?
Yes, actually, you can. That's why it was said at the outset that this book has come to end hopelessness. The first thing you can do is redefine yourselves as individuals. The second thing you can do is redefine yourselves as a society. And the third thing you can do is redefine success. You can give life a new purpose.
That's what I want to do. I want to find a new purpose for life. I want to create a new definition of success.
Others in your world have done so. You can too. And if enough of you do, the whole system can be turned upside down.
Is this what you want us to do?
There is nothing that I want you to do. I have no preference in the matter. Your idea that God has something that God wants you to do is what has gotten your species into a lot of trouble. I do not make demands. I make observations. Remember that always. God does not make demands. God makes observations. I have created life as a process by which you may do as you choose to do and experience what you choose to experience. This is what free choice is all about. Out of what you choose to be, do, and have, you decide who you are. This is what you are doing in every moment. I have told you this over and over, and I will repeat this to you often so that you will always remember it and thus remember who you really are. Now, if it is your choice to turn the system upside down and turn your life around as well, there are ways you can do that. One of those ways is to change your mind about what you think success is. Redefine the meaning of life. Decide that the purpose of life has nothing to do with the three P's. Live your life according to the core concepts of holistic living. 1. Awareness. 2. Honesty. 3. Responsibility.
What do you mean by holistic living?
I mean living as a whole being. Holistic living is whole person living. It is a body, mind, and spirit living. It is before, now, and after living. It is being completely and authentically all that you choose to be in this moment, now. It is being aware of what you are choosing to be. It is being honest about it. And it is being responsible for it. Living this way is another definition of success. What is interesting is that very often people who live this way also achieve greater productivity, popularity, and possessions, but not because they are trying to do so. This just happens automatically. It is a byproduct rather than the end product of the process called your life lived.
Chapter 12. Love.
My girlfriend always says she loves me, but I don't feel the same yet, and I don't know why. How will I know when it will be the right time to say, I love you?
There is never a wrong time to say, I love you, nor is there a wrong person to whom to say it. We'll get more into that in just a minute. Right now, let me answer your question a bit more directly. It is the right time to say, I love you, when your heart speaks the words, not your brain. When you do not have a second thought, nor even a first, when you are completely outside your thoughts and totally into your feelings. Remember this always. Only say, I love you, to another when you are out of your mind.
Ha, that's a good one.
I actually meant it quite literally. If you've still got to think about it, don't talk about it. Yet love, love, love everyone, silently, in the stillness of your heart. Allow the whole world to feel that love. Soon you'll find, as you give your love to everyone, that you desire to express your love in particular ways with particular people, based on the way that you are feeling. You will experience three expressions in particular which will define your relationships. Your species has come to call these eros, filial, and agape. These are being loosely defined in your day and time as romantic love, brotherly or family love, and universal love for God and for all humankind. These three kinds of love have nothing to do with different quantities of love, but different varieties of love. And these different varieties produce different feelings, which produce different ways of showing love. Love can be given in the same amount to everyone. It can be felt just as strongly for a brother as for a husband, or for all humankind. It is not a matter of strength or amount, but of feelings and expressions.
What actually is love, anyway?
Your poets and philosophers have been trying to define that for centuries. They come very close to the truth when they say that love is transcending the experience of duality. It is an experience of oneness, of unity, where there is no separation, where separation is unthinkable. The idea of duality becomes the illusion, and the idea of oneness becomes the reality. This is the ultimate reality. This is the way things really are. You are not separate from each other, and you never have been. Love is the human urging to prove that and to experience it. You know that you are experiencing love for yourself and for others when you identify everyone's best interest as one.
Thanks. That's pretty inspiring. But I'm still wondering, how do I know whether what I'm feeling for my girlfriend is lust or love? How do I know whether it's just sex that I want or something more?
When you say just sex, you make it sound as though this is not enough, that this is somehow wrong. That is the old mindset I was just telling you about. Sex for the sake of sex is very bad, is not okay. You've shamed yourself for having these desires. You've made yourself terribly wrong. This is what has created a lot of the anxiety around sex and all of the guilt. Yet this is a natural desire. I have built it into you.
Okay, so how do I know when it's one or the other with my girlfriend? Lust or love?
Look at your motives for wanting to be around her. If almost every time you are with her, all you can think of is having sex with her, then see what that says to you. Don't make those feelings bad. Just know that it's what you're feeling. That's where you're at. Sexual energy and sexual chemistry can be very strong during the teen years. It's also very natural. This does not mean that all you desire with a person is sex, but it does mean that you are wise to check out your feelings further, and to look deeply into what you mean when you say, I love you.
So what do the words, I love you, mean?
What some people have decided they mean is very often much different from what the words actually mean. So I understand why you would be confused and wondering when to use them. Much of the human race has decided I love you means I am yours, I belong to you, or I own you. This translates very soon into I now owe you something and you owe me something. It is now my job to make you happy and you must do the same for me. This is not what it means, but this is what many people want it to mean, need it to mean, and insist that it should mean. That is why so many people want to hear it, and also why it is so difficult for some people to say it, and for nearly all people to live up to it.
So if I love you does not mean these things, what does it mean?
I love you means the God in me sees the God in you.
I've heard that saying before. Isn't that what the word namaste means?
It is. That is another way of saying I love you.
But we think I love you means I'm ready for more. I'm moving to the next level in our relationship. I'm seeing you differently than I see everyone else. It means you're special to me, and there's no one else like you, at least not for me.
It can mean that, depending upon the kind of feeling you are experiencing. Remember, with love, the way you feel and the way you show how you feel will differ from relationship to relationship. Yet different kinds of feeling should not be confused with different levels of feeling. This idea that you are seeing someone differently is what has caused many difficulties in life, because what humans seem to communicate is that they love one person more than another, when what their soul really wishes to communicate is that they love one person in a different way than they love another. They have a different feeling. In truth, you were created with the ability to see everyone through the eyes of love.
Wait a minute, do you mean that we're supposed to love everybody?
You are not supposed to do anything. Who would do the supposing? Who is issuing the orders? Who is making the demands? The answer is no one. So it is not a question of what you are supposed to do, but of what you are capable of doing. You are capable of loving everyone equally, not in the same way, but in the same amount. Here is a great secret about love. Remember this always. Love is not quantifiable. Love is not something that you can dole out in different quantities. You cannot love one person a little and love someone else a lot. You either love someone or you don't. Once again, let me say, how you feel your love for them is another matter. What demonstrations you make of the love you feel will be a reflection of those feelings. But love itself is not quantifiable. Most human beings imagine that it is, and in fact, that it should be. And this is another big misunderstanding.
I shouldn't love my mom more than I love a stranger in Tibet. I shouldn't love my girlfriend more than I love the other girls in school.
It is not a question of shoulds or shouldn'ts. Try not to should on yourself, and don't let other people should on you either. It is a question of knowing who you really are and knowing who everyone else really is. Who you are is love. That is who and what you are. It is the energy of which you are made. It is the energy that holds you together. Perhaps this is why, when you feel that you are not being allowed to love, it can seem as if you are falling apart. You are the energy of life itself, which is God actualized. Another word for this is love. The words God, life, and love are interchangeable. You are God, which is life, which is love, which is God, which is life, and so on. It is a circle that never ends, and it is all the same thing.
So this means I should love all the girls in school just as much as I love my girlfriend?
Not that you should, but that you can.
My girlfriend would be pretty unhappy about that.
Again, let me ask you to remember that I am not saying in the same way or with the same feeling. I am saying just as much. All of life is vibration. That is all that it is. That is all that you are. It is possible to be in harmony with another vibration or to be in sync with it. To be in harmony means that your vibes and the other vibes blend. The vibrations are occurring at the same time in different ways. You are harmonized. To be in sync means your vibes and the other vibes are occurring at the same time in the same way. You are synchronized. This is a very metaphysical way of saying that you can have different feelings of love with different people and even different feelings of love with the same people at different times. This explains what most people mean when they say that they love this person more than that person. What they are experiencing is that they love them in a different way. The vibe is different.
I get it.